1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive at 124 Store Street in Concord. And you can visit them online at weedfamilyautomotive.com or give them a call at 603-225-7988. Dan, welcome back. Great to see you.
Great to see you too, Ken. How are you doing?
I am doing very well.
And you look great.
Thank you. We have a very special guest on the line, and it's Senator Blanche Lincoln. And Senator Lincoln served in the United States Senate representing Arkansas as a Democrat from 1999 to 2011. And Senator Lincoln, we welcome you to Feldis and Kale. A delight to have you with us.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm delighted to join you.
You know, you mentioned to me off the air, Senator Lincoln, that you had a neighbor that has a name very similar to Feldis.
Well, it's funny that we do have my father-in-law's neighbor's name is Feldis in Little Rock, and we have a neighboring farm, but they're Felton. But his name is Dan, so I got a little confused. I wasn't sure who was going to be on the program. I was going to be talking to a local in Arkansas.
No, it's Ken and Dan here in New Hampshire, and I know you have quite a bit of affection for the Granite State, Senator Lincoln.
I do. It's a beautiful place. It's full of lovely people that are, just great to visit, and they're always welcoming, but it's beautiful. It's a beautiful place, and I never realized it had shoreline until I visited. It's small, but you got some shoreline up there, too.
We do.
It's a beautiful place.
Beautiful Hampton Beach and Rye Beach and Seabrook. Yeah, it's very, very nice. Not much of it, as you say, but we take advantage of it.
Yeah, and you're good in agriculture, which is always just smart. It's a great thing for me. I'm a farmer's daughter, and y'all grow different things, but I love this thing with farmers. Agriculture is important.
No question about that. Right now, Senator Lincoln, President Biden, and Senate and House Democrats are pushing for a $3.5 trillion Build Back Better plan, which you, as a Democrat, don't exactly think is the way to go. Explain.
Well, I think it's important for us to be balanced. If there's one thing I know, is that, you've got to look for the balance in how things, particularly with the circumstances we have found ourselves in, with a pandemic and, the economy, all kinds of things going on right now. We need to figure out what the best balance is. And I think, they're now working towards coming down from that $3.5 trillion big expansion, looking to see if there's not somewhere smaller that they can be, being responsible in terms of paying for it as well. And looking for those pay-fors, you have to be balanced and responsible. And I think taking the corporate rate back up to 28% is not responsible. We've seen study after study that is telling us that the people that bear the biggest brunt of that are the workers, because it means lost jobs and moving corporate headquarters overseas. We are already, New Hampshire businesses already pay a higher tax rate than global competitors, and we don't want to see something that's going to raise the federal corporate rate to pay for a bigger plan, to put states even further behind with a combined rate. The combined rate. I think that's one of the things that, when you get down into the weeds, which is what you have to do in Washington, if you're really paying attention, is get into the weeds. Most people don't realize that we have a combined rate because we are the United States of America. We have a state corporate rate, and then we also have a federal corporate rate. And when you combine those, we are in an unbelievable predicament if we are to take that corporate rate back up. The proposed combined corporate rate under what's being presented initially in terms of going up to that full 28% would be a 33.54% rate for New Hampshire. The current rate, that's combined corporate rate, would be 27.1%. Most people think, it's just 21%. It's not. Each state has their own corporate rate. So you have to think about the details. And really building back our economy right now in this really delicate situation that we find ourselves after the pandemic and so many other things, we've got to pay attention. And this is going to be an important thing globally because I guarantee you our global neighbors are paying attention.
Senator Lincoln, you talk about balance. For so many working people and working families, there's been an imbalance in this economy. It hasn't worked for everyone. It's worked largely for those at the top. Billionaires have made trillions of dollars, literally, including in this pandemic. Corporations, many corporations have made a lot of money in this pandemic, included in this pandemic. And simple things like making the United States, stopping the United States from being the last country in the industrialized world to have paid family and medical leave so that people, workers, can see the smile of a newborn child, that workers can be there with a loved one who has cancer treatment. That balance isn't there for working families. And and how do you make sure it's there? How do you pay for it to make sure it's there, if not, in part, by increasing the corporate tax rate?
Well, if you look at all, the studies that come out from the typical groups, the Joint Committee on Tax, the JCC, the Congressional Budget Office, the Tax Foundation, the Tax Policy Center, all of them agree that workers of all income levels pay the cost in the form of lower wages and lost jobs. You know, the Treasury Department data also tells us on average families of lower income households bear a larger tax burden from corporate taxes than from individual income taxes. These corporations are going to pass that on when that happens. So I think it's important for us to think that through, that if we were to raise it way above whatever the rest of the world is paying in corporate taxes, then we're going to see a loss of jobs and more pressure on working families out there. Now, I do believe in an infrastructure bill, and I believe in a soft infrastructure bill. You're exactly right. There is no way that, you know, particularly in states like New Hampshire and Arkansas, where you've got a lot of rural areas, child care, for instance, you've got working a tremendous disproportionate share of working women now than you have ever had, making sure that there's child care and that there's transportation, and roads and bridges that get you there. Just getting around the Mississippi River for me is a difficulty there at Memphis, when bridges, fail. So yes, we've got to make investments. We've got to do it in a smart way. And there are other ways to pay for it. I mean, we have to look at different types of papers that we can come up with. You know, the Treasury itself, or the IRS, not the Treasury, but the IRS says that, you know, there's $1 trillion in taxes that goes uncollected annually. We've been saying that for years. Now we have the technology that helps us find that. If you look at the technology that exists today in data collection and analytics and other things like that, we can do a better job of collecting the uncollected taxes. You know, we can look at a whole host of other things, you know, minimum taxes for companies. There's large corporations out there that pay nothing, you know, but there's just ways that we look at it without jumping at increasing a corporate rate that really makes us uncompetitive globally. We don't want to lose these corporate headquarters. We don't want to lose these jobs. We don't want to lose them to other countries. And I think that it's really important for us to be thoughtful about how we do this.
Senator, I completely agree. And in fact, in New Hampshire, under the Democratic budget, we closed loopholes for big corporations. The rate went down and closed those loopholes for big corporations are taking advantage of those loopholes. And we increased enforcement. Those are some of the same things that are being proposed at the federal level, not simply just increasing the corporate rate. Now, we're at 21% national corporate rate. There's a proposal to go to 28, but there's a lot of folks who agree 25 is the sweet spot. Do you disagree that going from 21 to 25 makes sense?
I think we should go as low as we possibly can in order to be able to keep our corporate. And I think that as people get serious about investigating where we can find other revenue sources, we could go lower. I don't think you can just pull that number out of the air. You know, we've got great committees. We've got great opportunities to be able to figure out where that needs to be. But we should pull out the stops in trying to figure this out. The U.S. multinational companies headquartered here grew faster domestically than they did abroad when we lowered that tax. The growth in the U.S. It occurred across the board: jobs, increased capital expenditures in property, investment in plants and equipment, increased R&D investment. Those are the things that companies are going to do if they have those extra dollars in most instances. And it grew faster on the average, in the prior 20 years before, those increases. So I think it's for us to sit here and say there's a perfect number somewhere. I think that's for those committees to figure out. How low can they get it to make our corporate employers in this country the most effectively competitive in a global marketplace?
Senator, in terms of examination and thoughtful examination, there has been over the years a lot of analysis and work, both committee work and think tank work. And in fact, conservative think tanks for a long period of time said the corporate tax rate should be 25%. Lowered to 25%. Of course, President Trump lowered it and proposed lowering it to 21%. So these conservative think tanks who were arguing for 25% all along, and then President Trump lowered it to 21%, and President Trump did it, and he said, look, all this, the benefits of cutting this are going to trickle down to workers. Well, workers haven't seen that, and families haven't seen that. So what do you say to workers and families who haven't seen their wages grow while corporations are making, in some cases, record profits with a massive corporate tax rate cut?
Well, in some of those studies, though, that counter to that, I mean, you're seeing that there was a greater increase in terms of pay in the supervisory role. The wages growth was greater for those on the factory floor and in non-supervisory roles than the managers from the start of 2018 to the end of 2019. So you can see that people, that if we can keep our jobs in our corporate America going, they're going to see those increases, or they're going to see, they're certainly maintaining of what they've got.
And what do you say, Senator, to folks who would argue, look, all right, I get some of the arguments here. However, if you're going to make sure the rate goes down, shouldn't you make sure that goes up by, for example, raising the minimum wage nationally from $7.25 an hour to something that makes a lot more sense? What should the minimum wage be so that families can actually make ends meet? They work hard at $7.25. You work hard. You're living in poverty. What should the minimum wage be?
I don't have a number for that. I can pull one out of the sky, but I think that's something that should be debated. I don't disagree with that at all. That you could raise the minimum wage some, but that's something that you and I aren't going to figure out on this phone call.
Probably not. I mean, we could.
By the legislators and the statistics that show us what can have the most positive impact.
Right.
Yeah. You and I aren't going to figure out those specific numbers. I think that the rate ends up probably somewhere around, I don't know, maybe 23. It could be less than 25. It probably is going to be more than 21. They're going to come up with something that fits the formula of what hopefully gives us the maximum benefit for working families and keeping our jobs and our corporate headquarters in the U.S. as opposed to sending them to China.
Right.
Don't you think, though?
China added 114 global Fortune 500 headquarters when we lost 58.
As far as the minimum wage, though, is concerned, don't you think that's a state issue? I mean, you know, if you say $15, I mean, $15 is different in New Hampshire than it is, for example, in New York or California or, you know, other states around the country. You know, I think it varies from state to state when you talk minimum wage. It really can't be, you know, one size fits all, as it were.
Not.
Yeah.
There's a federal wage, and then states add to it. All states have a difference. I mean, they add to the minimum wage, or take away, they can't take away from it, but they can add to it.
Yeah. Our guest today is Senator Blanche Lincoln, and Senator Lincoln served in the U.S. Senate representing Arkansas as a Democrat from 1999 to 2011. So during those years, Senator Lincoln, you served in the Senate with Joe Biden. Did you ever think you'd be president?
You know, I sat next to Joe on the Senate floor for about 4 years. Our desks were next to each other, and Joe was a very, and still is, he's somebody that wants to get it right. He is somebody that truly believes in the institutions of the United States. And, he likes to make progress. You know, he would spend 50% of his time sitting over there with his buddies on the Republican side and 50% of his time sitting over there with the Democrats. He was extremely thoughtful as just a friend. You know, I came to the Senate having served in the House as well. I got married and had my twins when I was in the House and arrived in the Senate with a twin 2-year-olds and my husband was an OBGYN. So we were busy. We had a busy family, and he was incredibly thoughtful about, you know, the rigorous schedules of the Senate and everything else, and was always, he and Jill were always extremely kind to us and understanding our, not only, you know, the work ethic and the work, the workload that we had, in the Senate, but also, just what families face, just like Dan's talking about, you know, families, whether you're in the Senate or whether you're working elsewhere, there's child care to be had. There's dinners to be served. There's school meetings to go to. There's all kinds of stuff going on. I think he gets that.
Senator, you worked collaboratively in the U.S. Senate, just like you talked about President Biden, then U.S. Senator working collaboratively in the Senate. Certainly in any legislative body, including in the state Senate in New Hampshire, which I had the honor of serving the 3 terms in, including majority leader, working collaboratively is the way to get things done. You know, I don't know how many times we're on the Senate floor, one time arguing with our Republican colleagues, the next bill arguing the opposite end. It just happens that way, and people don't take it personally. You just do it, and you work things out as much as you can. Sometimes you can't in the end, and you end up having a debate, and that's fine. That's democracy.
Yeah.
Do you worry that that spirit of collaborative work, you do your best to work it out. Sometimes you work it out and you make progress. Sometimes you end up having a fight, and that's okay. You just have a get together afterwards and laugh about it. Do you worry that spirit is waning in American democracy? And if so, why?
It's so hard. But you hit the nail on the head, Dan. It is tough to build relationships among your colleagues in today's world. Everybody's spending so much time, I don't know, whether it's raising money for campaigns or, I don't know, you know, being a part of a more insular group as opposed to a more combined body. I beg the leadership on both sides to do our weekly lunches at least once a month to have them bipartisan,
so that
we could eat lunch with our Republican colleagues. Do more of those types of things where we got to know each other better. That's where you build the trust with people that allows you to do what you're saying, and that is to work collaboratively and find the maximum common ground.
Yep.
You know, and people don't. They don't. I started when I came to the House. One of my best buddies was Bill Emerson, a Republican from Missouri, and we started the Civility Caucus. My husband said, "Oh my gosh," he said, "there's not enough scotch in all of Washington to make the Civility Caucus work." But we tried hard to really pull people together in just a common humanity and in friendship and in respect and doing those kind of things. I would encourage. One of the things my husband said, he said, "Well, how can I help you the most?" And I said, "Well, you know, occasionally they do these bipartisan dinners. I don't even know if they do them anymore. I hope they do. But I said, can you come? Just come. And when we come, we're going to sit at tables where, you know, we don't know people that well. And I'm going to ask to be put where we can meet people that we don't know." And I never will forget one dinner. We sat with Judd Gregg and his wife and Bernie Sanders and his wife. And I was in between the two of them, and Bernie was giving me grief about Walmart, and I was tended to be a more fiscally responsible Democrat, so we were talking with Judd, but I wasn't coming quite as far as he wanted me to on some of that kind of stuff. But then eventually, you know, I held my own and talked about the really positive things that Walmart was doing in the right direction for the environment, and I was sitting next to Judd's wife, and we started talking about our kids, and when we left, we parted, and we were much better off than we were before because we had visited in a very civil way. Judd looked at me and he says, "I think you're going to buy my piano, aren't you?" And I said, "I think I am. I talked to your wife, and my kids are getting ready to start piano, and your kids are finished, and we need a piano." But it's just that commonality that you share in raising children and having families and aging parents and all that kind of stuff. That brings out your human nature that allows you to really be able to, and people don't have the time to do that as much as they used to. And, that's kind of where I think we miss it. But anyway, I don't know how we saw that in these times of, I don't know, really fast moving information all the things that people feel like they have to do.
Well, Senator Lincoln, we certainly appreciate your time this morning being with us on Feldes and Kale. Any thoughts of running again? You're still a young woman. Any thoughts of running again?
You're very kind. I just turned 61.
That's young. That's young to me.
Closer to 70 than I am to 50. You're kind. Well, I love public service. I encourage it to everyone. It is a very important tool in this nation, and we live in an amazing democratic republic, but it only works when those who are governed participate in it. And whatever way you can, I hope people listening will participate in their government because it is a great thing.
Amen.
For all of its faults.
Senator Lincoln, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
And thanks for your service, too.
You got it. Thanks, Senator.
Bye-bye.
Take care. That is Senator Blanche Lincoln, former senator who served Arkansas from 1999 to 2011 in the United States Senate. And a delight to have her with us today on Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And also by Weed Family Automotive at 124 Store Street in Concord. Online, weedfamilyautomotive.com. You can call them at 603-225-7988. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and also by Weed Family Automotive. They are located at 124 Store Street in Concord. Online at weedfamilyautomotive.com. You can call them at 225-7988. They will solve all of your automobile issues, as they've solved the automobile issues of Dan Feldes and myself over the years.
No doubt about it. They're great.
Check
them out, Weed Family Automotive.
They are terrific. Now, we would be remiss if we did not mention this story today on Feldes and Kale. This took place on Wednesday. We're recording this on a Thursday. And by a 4-1 vote, the New Hampshire Executive Council rejected $27 million in federal funding to boost the state's vaccination effort. All four Republicans on the council voted against the funds, despite the fact that Governor Sununu urged them to accept the funds. Nonetheless, the four Republicans refused the funding. What was your reaction when you heard about that, Dan?
Well, look, Ken, we're last in New England in vaccination rate, or hovering around middle of the pack nationwide. And vaccines work. Ken, you've been vaccinated. I've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, I got the Moderna. I think you got the Pfizer you mentioned on the show the other day. You got the booster recently.
Yeah.
Everybody should, if they can, unless they have a medical or religious reason, should get vaccinated. It works. And it helps protect not just you and your family, but the community at large and public health. And to reject federal money. I mean, look, the New Hampshire way is taking the federal money as much as you can.
Right.
to reject $27 million and federal money to help with the vaccination effort, that's just a head scratcher. In the middle of a pandemic.
When people are still dying state and elsewhere, but in this state specifically, because we're the ones who rejected the $27 million.
And they accepted the stuff prior. It doesn't make any sense other than... You have a Republican, you know, you got Republican Party elected leaders who are catering to the far right fringe, who are protesting and causing a ruckus. People in elected office just need to understand sometimes, and it seems like the Republicans in elected office here in New Hampshire need to understand this, that sometimes the squeaky wheel shouldn't get the grease, Ken. Sometimes you ought to just look out and do what's right, not try to placate the far right. And that's what's happened here. Now, look, I you're right that Governor Sununu publicly said that he supports us and pushed back at the meeting. However, the day before he was asked, are the votes there? And he said, I don't know. I haven't had those discussions. If you're not going to pick up the phone and have private discussions to encourage his fellow Republican counselors, who he campaigned for these folks. If you're not going to pick up the phone and say, you know what, I campaigned for you. We're on the same team. We're all collectively on the same team as New Hampshire elected officials and citizens who care about public health. You better do the right thing and vote for this, just like we've voted for this in the past and increase our vaccination effort. So people who are getting this, we stem the tide of this thing where people are dying in New Hampshire, you ought to do that. And it sounds like he didn't do that. It's one thing to do it in front of the cameras. It's another thing to lead privately and try to convince your colleagues to do the right thing. I think that's where the leadership shines. It's not in front of the bright lights of the press conferences, which he likes, and these other photo ops, which he likes. That doesn't matter as much as what do you do when the bright lights are off, and what kind of conversations do you have, and what leadership do you show? And I think this is on him as much as anybody else.
You know, I guess we'll never know how much he actually urged his executive counselors on the Republican side to vote to accept the $27 million. We'll probably never find that out. But do you think there was, you know, an assumption on his part that they would do this? I mean, it just seems to be really a no-brainer to me. I mean, and maybe he felt it was as well. Although, you know, obviously you can always go that extra mile, and we really don't know how much he did or how much he didn't do in going that extra mile and urging, really urging his executive counselors to vote to accept this $27 million.
I mean, it seems like a pattern here. You know, he, you know, the same thing with the reproductive health care contracts that have had a long, reliable history of bipartisan support, roughly 15,000 Granite Staters, mostly women, rely upon those services. his executive council, the people he campaigned for, voted them down. He publicly said, well, I support him. No indication whatsoever that he privately worked to convince him to actually vote for it. And when you're the de facto leader of a party and you are the leader of these meetings, when you're it's governor and council meetings, it's on you to lead and to convince. And either he did not try or he's ineffective. It's one or the other.
So where do we go from here? I mean, is this issue now dead? I mean, we decline the $27 million from the federal government to help battle coronavirus. Is that the last opportunity we're going to have to get this federal money? Or where does it go from here?
You know, look, I haven't looked at it in the level of detail in terms of the legality of it. I mean, some funds that come to the state have to go through both the Joint Legislative Fiscal Committee of the legislature and the Executive Council and Governor Council. Sometimes you can pass legislation to require the acceptance. I'm sure you're probably going to see somebody file legislation now that says that that it's required to be accepted, so you go around the Executive Council. Now, whether or not the legislature approves that, probably not, given the majority in the legislature and given the anti-vaccination rhetoric of the Republicans that are elected. And the troubling thing here, Ken, too, is this doesn't represent the vast majority of Republicans. And it doesn't represent independents or Democrats. It's catering to a small segment of the Republican Party. And making public policy by catering to a small segment of any political party is not productive, period, especially in a pandemic.
Yeah, I really don't get it, and I'm sure most of us never will. How that money could be rejected. Some said, it would have to follow some federal mandates and that sort of thing, but the money has been accepted in the past.
Exactly. Yeah. And the money's been accepted in the past. It's been deployed in the past. It's been bolstering not just the vaccine registry, but the outreach efforts on vaccinations and helping support people on the ground who are doing the work to make sure that people get vaccinated. But there is no indication, and the Attorney General laid this out, and I disagree with the Attorney General sometimes. I agreed here. There's no indication that the acceptance of this money would require New Hampshire to just do a mandate of some kind. And, whether or not the rules that President Biden is putting forward on employers with 100 or more employees go forward, that's a separate issue. This is a separate issue. And there's going to be, obviously, litigation on that. But this does not bind us in New Hampshire to that potential future rule. And so that's a bunch of policy and legal stuff. But let's get to the big picture. The big picture is vaccinations work. We're in a pandemic. If you want to get back to work, if you want to keep our economy open to the maximum extent, you get vaccinated. That's it. It's not rocket science, Ken. It really isn't.
No, it's not.
And to reject $27 million of federal money to help with that effort, that's bad for public health. It's bad for our economy. And that's on the elected Republicans. It's not on Republican citizens. That's a big difference between elected Republicans and Republican citizens these days.
Yeah, seems to be.
And the elected Republicans are messing this up.
Another individual who's been involved in the vaccine battle recently is Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets, who won't play, won't practice, can't be eligible under local New York COVID-19 vaccination mandates. So it looks as if Kyrie, who just always wants to be the center of attention.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's what it comes down to in his case.
I agree. And I'm glad he's no longer with the Celtics.
Me too. Me too. As talented a player as he is when he's healthy, which isn't all that often, You know, I it was good riddance when the Celtics got parted ways, let's say, with Kyrie Irving.
Absolutely.
And now I'm sure the Brooklyn Nets aren't all that pleased to have him as a member of their team as well. So we'll see how much longer he lasts in Brooklyn and what his career is going to be going forward if he refuses to be vaccinated. You're still seeing players, Jaylen Brown and Al Horford of the Celtics right now have COVID. So it's a league issue. I'm sure it's not ending anytime soon, but Kyrie is kind of the face of the anti-vaccine right now in the NBA. We will take a break. It's Feldis and Kale right here at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our friends at Weed Family Automotive, 124 Storage Street in Concord. Online at weedfamilyautomotive.com. You can call them. I am certain that Bobby and Charlie are standing by right now to take your calls. 603-225-7988. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, 124 Storage Street in Concord, online at weedfamilyautomotive.com. The number there is 603-225-7988, and we are going to be mandated to use the 603 for all of our in-state calls very, very soon. And that's why I mentioned 603 now, because you're going to have to use it, I think, as of the 25th of this month.
You know, it is a 603, so I guess that makes sense, right, Ken?
I guess it does, but we never had to dial the three digits before unless we were out of state or, you know, what have
right,
you. But
right.
So it's going to change. If you know, if you just have the seven-digit number on your phone, I guess you're going to have to change that.
I have a lot of those programs.
Yeah,
programmed.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to change a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be a big headache.
Yeah, but I'm sure that it will be accomplished, and we'll get used to it. And I guess there will probably be a time in this state, probably sooner than later, when we will in fact have another area code, and it won't totally be the 603 as it has been for so many years.
Well, we'll
since
see.
Area codes came into being, we've been the 603
forever.
Yeah, forever. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be you know, a need for another area code. I mean, for a long time, Massachusetts just had one area code, and that was 617. But then they expanded to a number of different area codes now. So I'm sure the same thing is going to happen ultimately in the state of New Hampshire. You know, we talked with Senator Lincoln earlier in our show today from Arkansas, and she represented that state for 12 years, from 1999 to 2011, two six-year terms in the United States Senate, sat right beside Joe Biden from time to time. Where do we go now, Dan? Where do we stand with this $3.5 trillion Build Back Better bill? I mean, you have a couple of defectors, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin from the Democratic side. So, you know, if they decide to maintain their opposition, then it looks like the bill could be dead in the water unless it's changed and, you know, perhaps reduced in the number of trillion dollars that'll be spent.
Well, look, number one is you got to recognize that, like, the American Rescue Plan, just taking a step back, passed with only Democratic votes, and it was President Biden's initiative. And so for folks who are listening that got the child care tax credit, $300 per child per month in their bank account to help make ends meet for your children, that's President Biden and the Democrats who did that. It is President Biden and the Democrats who are proposing support for child care. They're proposing paid family medical leave insurance, you know, that a worker can be there when their child smiles for the first time, rolls over for the first time, it gets sick for the first time, that a worker can be there for a loved one who's struggling maybe with opioid epidemic, who for a loved one caretaking for a parent or grandparent who has some disabling conditions. That's what paid family and medical leave insurance is all about. And that's what it's always been all about, is making sure workers don't have to choose between their job or the family. So these are key things that I think need to stay in there. You got all kinds of groups out there, Ken, saying, you know what, let's cut. We propose cutting out the medical part of paid family and medical leave. Really? So the opioid epidemic, cancer treatment, caring for senior citizens, you're going to cut that out and it's only going to be a little bit of parental leave? These are the kinds of things that I think are just, you know, folks just need to stick to their principles here. why they propose this stuff to begin with. And if you trim it down, fine. But don't trim things out like that. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And so you can do a lot of this stuff, even with a pared down package, Ken. You really can. And there's a reason why you propose something where they proposed it, because they know they're going to have to pare it back a little bit. That's a function of the process. But you just don't throw things out, throw out the baby with the bathwater. I mean, so I don't know what's going to happen, to answer your general question. I don't have a crystal ball. I think if anybody knew what was going to happen in Washington, D.C., they'd probably be like, you know, a psychic that should go on the road or whatever, you know. Join the circus.
They'd make a lot of money if they knew what was going to happen in Washington, D.C.
So I don't know, but all I can say is, you know, there is an imbalance. Workers, senior citizens feel it. It's there. It's more pronounced in this pandemic. So the whole genesis of this, quote, build back better thing is, let's build back better for them, for workers, for families, for senior citizens, for caretakers, investing in a care economy. And if that's going to be, those things are going to be thrown away or completely whittled away, what the heck is the point? You know what I'm saying? I mean, look, let's take care of senior citizens. Let's take care of workers and families. They've been getting the short end of the stick for a while, and especially during this pandemic. It is time to build back better for them. Pass a package with meaningful paid family and medical leave, meaningful caretaker support, meaningful childcare, so workers don't have to choose between their families, their kids, and this, and their jobs. We can deal with these workforce issues, deal with affordable housing. These are the things that we can and should deal with in this pandemic to build back better for them.
Yeah, there are just, you know, there are some hot button issues in there that you know, don't exactly sit well with middle America, and I think we know what some of those are, but we'll see how it plays out. But right now we'll take a break. It is Feldus and Kale, 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, as well as Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, heading down the home stretch of this edition of Feldus and Kale. And you know, Dan, I was remiss in our last edition of the program not to congratulate you and the Iowa Hawkeyes on their victory last Saturday over Penn State. A signature victory for that Iowa program.
No doubt about it. A heck of a game. As you and I have talked about, Ken, Iowa's got a great defense. They're averaging, I think, 3 interceptions a game. It's crazy. And they got a great defense, and they're really locked down against Penn State, and won 23-20. It is a signature victory. They're ranked 2nd in the nation now. My Iowa Hawkeyes are on a roll. No sign of slowing up. And hopefully this weekend against Purdue, homecoming game will be broadcast, I think, on ABC.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll win that game too.
Should be a good one. The Boilermakers and the Hawkeyes.
Boilermakers and the Hawkeyes. The Boilermakers don't have the best record, but they're a strong team, and they got their star wide receiver, I think Derek Bell's his name. They got him back. So, but again, that defense for the Hawks, that's the bulwark there, and a heck of a defense. Maybe only Georgia has a better defense, who's ranked number 1.
Well, there you go. That'll put the ribbon on another edition of Feldus and Kale. Don't forget Celtics basketball all year long, starting next Wednesday, the 20th, against the New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden, right here at 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Go Sox!
Go Sox!